It's Philosophy Talk.
It can be interesting, it can be colorful, it can be creative and inspiring, or it can do anything.
BS is everywhere, in the media, in our political discourse,
even in the hallowed halls of academe.
Which raises the question, if truth is so valuable, why is there so much BS?
There are conflicting forces at work. It's like the fact that everybody wants to live doesn't prevent us from behaving in ways that are very deleterious to our health.
Our guest, Harry Frankfurt, author of On Truth and On BS.
It sometimes is in our interest not to make a fuss about it. A lot of truths are unimportant. You wouldn't conclude from the fact that we eat too much and smoke too much and behave in other ways that are self-destructive. You wouldn't conclude from that we don't care about health.
Truth and BS.
Coming up on Philosophy Talk, after the news.
Welcome to Philosophy Talk, the program that questions everything.
Except your intelligence. I'm John Perry.
And I'm Ken Taylor. We're coming to you from the studios of 91.7 KALW, local, innovative public radio for San Francisco.
We're continuing conversations that begin at Philosopher's Corner on the Stanford campus. From there, they often end up in food fights, but sometimes they make it here to Philosophy
Yes,
Talk.
Yes, and when they do, they migrate from here to the internet via our blog, theblog.philosophytalk.org. John, I think, is in the midst of a blog that hopefully he'll finish very soon. And there, and also very soon, folks, you'll be able to download the complete archive of Philosophy Talk. Listen to it anywhere, anytime. We're just, those lawyers, you know, are a pain, but hey, what can I say? Lawyers, you know what lawyers are sometimes? BS artists.
BS artists. Well, could be, but we love our lawyers. I think that was last week's program.
Yeah, yeah. No, we're talking about BS and truth today, John.
Today we're talking about truth and BS, and we got Harry Frankfurt, and he's written two books. One is called On BS. It's not really called that. It's, the real title is On Bull, then one word, S-H asterisk T. We're not allowed to say that word. The second book is called On Truth. And as far as I know, we are allowed to say the word truth. I heard Vice President Cheney use it several times in an interview the other day. So apparently the government has not yet banned that inconvenient concept.
So Harry, in his book on BS, says BS is a kind of indifference to the truth. And he has some explanation of why there's so much about it. BS is different from lying, right? Because in lying, you say something false. Right. In BS, you don't care. When you BS, you don't care whether what you say is true or false. You're just trying to impress your audience or motivate them or something. But in his other book, he says truth is really important. It's really valuable, deeply valuable. But if truth is deeply valuable, as Harry says, why is there so much BS? I mean, what are we doing BSing so much if we care about the truth so much?
Well, and you might say that there's the paradox is even worse, Ken, because, you know, there is a lot of truth available. You can go on the internet and you can get the results of scientific investigations about whether there's water on the moon, whether there's water on Mars. You can go in the philosophical literature. You can read, as I have done, you can read well-researched tomes on whether Berkeley had severe constipation.
You
and
don't
whether,
think these are important truths?
Whether Boswell had the clap. Well, I'm not so sure they are important truths, but they're readily available. When you get to something that is important, like are there nuclear weapons in Iraq, or so is Social Security really failing? It's very hard to get anything except BS.
That's certainly true. That's certainly true. So maybe we don't have such an appetite for the truth at all as people think. Maybe the truth isn't so valuable as Harry and philosophers like to say. I mean, it's an interesting question and an interesting puzzle. You know, one of the things, though, you might really want to distinguish, we need to make some distinction. What's the difference between truth, BS, and, say, lying on the one hand? And to help us start to think about that, a roving philosophical reporter, Novella Carpenter, went out and asked a lot of people on the street what they think the difference is. She files this report.
Shacha.
Zibulei Sechel.
Hora.
Predubizhdenie.
That's BS in Mandarin, Hebrew, Arabic, and Russian. BS is a worldwide phenomenon. Still, many people struggle to define it.
I guess it's like, you think of an onion, right? Middle of the onion, you got your nugget of truth. And then you're wrapping it in layer upon layer, if you're a really good BS artist. Layer upon layer of what? Not untruth, just creative use of fact, I guess, right?
Well, I think that usually BS means that there are no negative consequences for the person it's directed at, right?
I don't know, people trying to make you believe something even though they know that it's completely off base.
Some people know exactly what BS is.
When you litigate for a living, you have to have a really good bullshit meter. For when is somebody telling you the truth? When are they telling you most of the truth? And when are they giving you an answer that doesn't really answer the question and they're leading?
First Amendment rights lawyer James Wheaton has a lawyerly definition of BS.
It's important to think that bullshitting is a subspecies of the larger class of lies, lying, which relates to falsehoods.
Then there's sales BS.
The essence of the direct sale is BSing. Finding out what the person needs, which may not be what you're selling, but finding out what they really need and then giving them that.
We humans value truth, so why is there so much BS? Some people argue it's an age-old practice of harmless storytelling.
Some people think of it as like the big fish story, right? You know, I caught a fish this big, and you really probably didn't catch a fish that big, but through your elaborate storytelling, that fish becomes bigger and bigger and bigger. At the very basic level, you did catch that fish. You didn't not catch the fish. That would be lying.
I'm not BSing when I say, for Philosophy Talk, I'm Novella Carpenter.
Thanks, Novella. I'm John Perry. With me is Ken Taylor.
Yeah, that was a nice report, and we're joined by Harry Frankfurt. He's Professor Emeritus of Philosophy at Princeton University, author of On BS, and also, more recently, of Untruth. Harry, welcome to Philosophy Talk.
Thanks very much. I'm glad to be here.
Hi, Harry. Welcome to Philosophy Talk. John Perry here.
Hi, John.
Now, you philosophically speaking, you kind of own the concept of BS. I don't. So you get to tell us exactly what you mean by BS, and then tell us how it differs from outright lying.
Well, what I said in the book was that it seemed to me that BS is essentially a matter of being indifferent to whether what's being said is true or false. The heart of it is an attempt to manipulate the people to whom it's addressed, to change their attitudes or their feelings or their beliefs. And the question of whether what you say in order to accomplish this, whether it's true or whether it's false, is really not of primary concern. The main concern is the effectiveness of the speech in producing the results desired. And the truth or falsity of what's being said is of, at best, secondary importance. In lying, the person who tells a lie has to at least believe that what he's saying is false, and it's important to him that it be false because that's what he's after. He's trying to conceal the truth. He's trying to induce the person to whom he's talking to believe something that isn't true, to change that person's view of the world. And so there, the distinction between true and false is of fundamental importance to the person who lies.
So in a way, does that suggest that in a way a person who lies is honoring the truth more, you know? I mean, because they know that what they're not so much indifferent to the truth, but they have this means. They're trying to induce somebody to believe something they know to be false or believe to be false, and that's because they think truth, if they believe the truth, it would be bad for them or something like that or something. So it sounds like honoring, lying is more respectful of the truth in a perverse way than BS. Is that right?
I think that is right. And I tried to convey that thought in my book, that the liar is respecting the difference between truth and falsity, and he thinks the truth is very important. That's why he wants to conceal it. He goes to some lengths to make some effort in order to prevent the person to whom he's talking from knowing what the truth is, and that indicates that he thinks the distinction between true and false is important. In BS, that distinction doesn't get particular, it's not a subject of particular concern.
Now, in your book on truth, I mean, in your book on BS, you more or less assume that the truth was important.
Yes.
In your book on truth, you defend the idea that truth is important. But how, I mean, aren't a lot of truths that we actually spend a lot of money discovering relatively unimportant? I mean, who really cares whether there's water on the moons of Neptune?
Well, sure. A lot of truths are unimportant because certain features of reality are simply not relevant to our interests or concerns. They don't mean very much to us, and therefore the truth about them is of very little importance. But that doesn't really diminish that doesn't really alter the fact that we need truth very badly in order to manage our affairs prudently, in order to know what we're doing, in order to know what we want, in order to know how to get what we want. And the entire enterprise of leading an intelligent life depends upon our being able to distinguish between true and false and being concerned about that distinction.
But now in your other work, and I'll mention to our listeners who've only read on BS or on truth that there's a big body of work by Harry Frankfurt.
Huge body of work. Very important work.
Very important to philosophy. One of the concepts you develop is caring. Mm-hmm. And it's clear that philosophers and scientists care a lot about the truth. Do you think this caring goes well beyond the practical utility of truth?
I think it does. And I feel that in my book on the subject, I didn't really elaborate that point sufficiently or penetrate into the significance of it very, very well. One of the things about truth that I think is important and that I didn't really sufficiently attend to in the book is that in grasping the truth, we are, in a way, selfless. I don't mean that we forget ourselves completely, that we lose our memories or we forget who we are or anything like that, but we are selfless in the sense that our desires and interests and preferences play no role in our decisions concerning what is true and what is false, at least if we're serious about it. The only concern is to get a grasp of the nature of reality, and this is independent of and insensitive, unresponsive to what we would like it to be, what we hope it would be, and so forth.
Well, wait a minute, Harry. You're going pretty fast here. Let's slow down a little bit, because
okay.
I think you've just walked into John's. I think John's going to pounce on you here. And even if he's not, I'm going to pounce on you on his behalf. I mean, look, okay, some truths are there and simple things. Grass is green. If somebody tells me the grass is blue, they've said something false. And if they know the grass is green and they've said the grass is blue, they're lying to me. Right? There is that stuff. And BS, I'm not quite sure what an example. The grass is good for you, right? Buy some grass, somebody who wants to get me. But look, you said we're selfless when we face the truth. But let's distinguish the truth from the pursuit of truth. We're not selfless in the pursuit of truth and deciding which truths to pursue. When we decide which truths to pursue to find out whether there's water on the other side of Alpha Centauri, that's our interests are driving that.
Oh,
our
sure.
practical interests. So truth just doesn't reach out and grab us. We have to pursue it, and the pursuit is a practical thing and deeply governed by our interests. So what do you mean we're selfless when facing the truth?
Well, our motivation in searching for the truth is clearly rooted in our own interests and desires and hopes and ambitions and so forth. But our decision concerning what is true and what is false is a decision that properly is made without being influenced by our preferences or desires or interests or practical concerns. In the final stage of our search for the truth, when we are trying to make up our minds what is true and what is false, we have to leave out those aspects of ourself that represent particular private individual points of view and try to focus as much as possible on the nature of reality itself.
Let me throw out a distinction, which I think we won't have time to explore till the next segment. But it seems to me there's a difference between being interested in truth and truth being important to us because of the subject matter of the truth. I mean, if I want to know whether to have a big lunch, then it's important to me to know what the truth is about what we're going to have for dinner. But there's a whole another level of caring about the truth that's kind of derivative. I care about the truth because so many other people care about the truth, even though the subject matter may not matter to much of anyone. Surely a lot of historical studies in philosophy, the reason we care a lot about the order in which Plato wrote his books, the reason there's a big community effort to find that out is because so many people care about it, but who really cares about the actual fact? It's caring about discovering the actual fact that's important.
That's a question we're going to leave hanging for our next segment. You're listening to Philosophy Talk. Our question today, if truth is so valuable, why is there so much BS around? Our guest is Harry Frankfurt from Princeton University.
We've been focused on trying to distinguish BS from other misleading or mendacious discourse. In our next segment, we'll look at how to spot BS when it's coming to you, why we're so often taken in, and maybe some ways to avoid being taken in. Now, you can join us by calling toll-free at 1-800-525-9917. And when you're formulating your question, we want you to be careful about your usage of words. No gutter mouths. We don't want to get in trouble with the FCC. Ken and I are using the word BS, and please follow our example. That's 1-800-525-9917.
The epistemology of BS, plus your calls and emails when Philosophy Talk continues.
B.B. King, the great B.B. King, and don't you lie to me. This is Philosophy Talk. We don't lie to you. I'm John Perry.
But we BS you sometimes. No, we don't. I'm just kidding. And I'm Ken Taylor. Our topic today, if truth is so valuable, why is there so much BS? And we want you to help us answer that question. Are you an expert BSer? I know we have experts in everything in that audience, in our audience. What about expert BSers? Are you good at spotting BS, at distinguishing BS from the God-honest truth? Have you ever been taken in by BS? Share your story with us. Help us answer the question, why, if truth is so valuable, there is so much BS around.
The toll-free number is 1-800-525-9917. I'll repeat, 1-800-525-9917. And anywhere in the world, when you get back from early mass or your 10K run, sit down at your computer, you can email us at comments@philosophytalk.org.
Our guest is Harry Frankfurt from Princeton University. Harry, look, given I've got a puzzle for you. Given your philosophical defense of the value of truth, you know, I agree with you that that truth is valuable practically and intrinsically. But you also say BS is an indifference to the truth. You actually end your book on truth by saying something about, you ask the question, how then can we fail to take the importance of factuality and of reality seriously? How can we fail to care about truth? You say, we cannot. But the BSer is indifference to truth. How's that work? I mean, if truth is so valuable, why does BS even exist?
Well, I mean, I think Harry's going to tell us that BS exists because of the human condition. You have to fill up conversational space like I'm doing now, and when you can't do it with truth, you do it with BS. Isn't that about it, Harry?
What do you think, Harry?
That's a good part of it. That's not the only part of it, though. It's just not just a matter of having to keep talking and not having very much to say, but it's also because a lot of people are heavily invested in the enterprise of manipulating the opinions and attitudes and beliefs of others. Especially in a democratic society, but in a society in which public opinion counts for something, where public opinion counts for something, the people who are interested in what the public thinks have a great interest, a great investment in altering what the public thinks, or at least in maintaining what the public thinks.
So I mean, it may be valuable for me to believe the truth, to know the truth and believe the truth, but it may be valuable for you to have me believe what's false or whatever. I mean, so it's not so much, when you say the BSer is indifferent to the truth of what he or she says, is it that they're indifferent to believing the truth themselves, or they're indifferent to having their interlocutor believe the truth?
Well, I think it's the latter. Obviously, the BSer has to have an interest in the truth because it's important to him that he be effective in what he's doing, and that's a matter of understanding what's going on and making the right choices and knowing how the knowing what the results of his activity will be. So he needs to have he needs to know the truth about that sort of thing. So he does care about the truth with respect to his own activity.
So look, folks out there, we want to know. You got good examples of BS? Have you ever offered? Are you an expert BSer? Tell us how you've gotten something out of BSing. If you care to share that story, you can protect your identity if you don't want everybody to know. If you've been taken in by BS, tell us how that worked and how you managed to spot it. Or if you've avoided being taken in, tell us how you've avoided it. 1-800-525-9917.
Harry, isn't it worth making a distinction between relatively benign BS and really corrosive BS? For example,
Sure.
Let me give you an example. Yesterday I was watching a movie, or I was about to watch a movie, and they have ads before movies now, and there was this great Coca-Cola ad. It was kind of a cartoon, and this kind of superhero comes out and walks through the city and throwing Cokes to everybody, and their lives improve incredibly. It goes from kind of a drab city to a beautiful city. Now, that is BS, right? On the other hand, if you got to sell Cokes, what are you going to say? I mean, there's not much truth there. They either taste good to you or they don't.
Yeah.
And I realize, you know, I've enjoyed the Coke ads my whole life. They're really good at, you know, Santa Claus and this superhero. It's relatively harmless. But other kinds of BS really kind of take up the space that should be occupied by some facts.
Well, you're certainly right in calling attention to the fact that BS is sometimes enjoyable. We have the concept of the BS artist. The artist is somebody with imagination, with originality, creative. He does things that we admire and respect. There's also a concept which, when I first wrote this essay, I presented it to a group of people. I was a fellow at something called the Whitney Humanities Center at Yale, where I was teaching at the time. I presented it to the other fellows in the group, and one of them was a young woman from, I'm not sure exactly where it was, Kentucky or Tennessee, one of the border states. And she said that in her part of the country, there was something called recreational speech, which seemed to be, as she described it, very close to BS. And it's fun. It can be enjoyable. It can be interesting. It can be colorful. It can be creative and inspiring. Or it can do anything.
Well, let me just ask a question which you may not want to answer. You've taught at least three places I know of, Rockefeller University, Yale University, and Princeton University. Is the amount of BS at these different universities about the same, or does it vary?
Well, you know, when I presented this paper to the other fellows in the group that I belong to at the Whitney Humanities Center at Yale, somebody, a member of the group, actually a physicist, said that he thought it was very appropriate that the essay should have been written at Yale because, he said, after all, Yale is the BS capital of the world.
Yeah, right. Jerry, I want to, but see, look, you said sometimes the talker has an interest in our believing, the audience believing the BS that he or she is spewing. But does the audience ever? Sometimes it seems to me we cooperate with the BS artist. That being taken in by BS is a kind of a low energy way of being self-deceived. You know, sort of purely self-driven self-deception takes a lot of cognitive maintenance. It's a lot of work. But if you let a BS artist take you in, it's an easier way to be self-deceived. What do you think about that?
And you're supposing that we have an interest in being self-deceived.
We sometimes do. I mean, I don't. Yeah, I don't, it seems to me there's so much self-deception around that we must have some interest. We must have some motivation for letting ourselves be deceived, and sometimes cooperating and letting ourselves be deceived. And so that's a convenient form of self-deception.
I think it's true that we do cooperate in the production of BS. We accept it. We tolerate it, for one thing. We're very permissive about it. We don't get angry at it. We don't get angry. We don't make a fuss. We don't charge people with a crime or with an offense or even with a particular immorality. So we encourage it by our passive attitude towards it, which I don't really understand why we are so tolerant and accepting of it, whereas with respect to lies, we are generally much harsher, much more strident in our response. We think lying is a terrible thing, and if we catch somebody lying, we punish them in some way.
Well, now, we've got some email here from Franny in Oakland, who's a little intolerant of some BS she thinks comes right from our program.
Oh, dear.
She or he writes, isn't the slogan, the show that questions everything except your intelligence, BS? Did you have a concern for the truth when you wrote it? I'll give an answer to that. Yes.
No.
It's BS, but it's a certain kind of BS. It enunciates an ideal towards which we actually do strive. It's kind of like in the Pledge of Allegiance when you say, you know, the home of the land of the free and the home of the brave.
That's the Star Spangled Banner.
Oh, Star Spangled Banner.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Yeah, I'm a little weak on certain things like that.
No, I don't think it's BS because it is an ideal to which we strive. Ideals to which you strive are not BS. They're things that you try to live up to. We've got a lot of callers on the line. Nancy in Oakland. Welcome to Philosophy Talk, Nancy.
Yeah, hi, thanks. How is BS different from when you see someone on the street, or even someone close to you in your own family, and they say, how are you doing? And, you know, everyone understands that you're supposed to put out something on the bright side and keep it short and, you know, really not say anything more than, oh, fine. And we know that that's being socialized, but then even in any kind of world at all, don't we all want to hear the good stuff, what's going well, and so that we can all get the goodies from each other? We get treated better when we say, everything's doing great. I'm fine. I'm great.
So, and so kind of BS is social lubricant that we couldn't really do without. Good point,
right,
I think.
Excellent point, Nancy. Thanks for the call. We don't have, and Nancy's suggesting, I think, that we don't have an unvarnished, you know, an unlimited appetite for the unvarnished truth, Harry. I mean, not in any of our social discourse, not in our politics, not anywhere.
Well, that's absolutely right. Often the truth was very inappropriate. You don't want to tell somebody how – somebody says, how you doing? You don't want to give them a long account of how you feel and how bad things are going and what your aches and pains are and what the doctor told you the last time you went to see him. You want to say, well, I'm doing okay. How are you? So it's true that it is a social lubricant. There are many situations in which the truth is inappropriate. You don't want to tell people exactly how they look to you. If your wife asks you, how do I look? You don't tell her you look really rotten. You tell her you look fine.
Unless she looks rotten in a way that you want her to get to the doctor or something.
Yes, there may be.
Of course, Ken and I aren't faced with that problem because our wives always look just gorgeous. But we have email actually from the FCC here. It says, Dear Ken and John, thanks so much for reminding your listeners not to use the BS word. If they don't want to say BS, the following are recommended alternatives: bull excrement, field putty, and non-recycled manure. So thanks so much.
You're listening to Philosophy Talk. We're talking about if truth is so valuable, why is there so much BS around? You can dial in and call, join the conversation, 1-800-525-9917. And Jed in Mill Valley has done that. Jed, welcome to Philosophy Talk.
Hey, greetings. You know, my view is that BS is basically fostered out of self-interest and nothing more. And
expand on that thinking.
It's not that it's tolerated, not always detected. It's not that people don't want to care about the truth, but it's just that they have it in their own interest to kind of BS, sometimes a little, sometimes a lot.
Jed, let me ask you, let's distinguish the producer from the consumer. I can see the producer's self-interest in having somebody believe BS. Does anybody ever have a self-interest in being taken in by BS?
Sure. Sometimes you can just kind of keep your radar up and say, you know what, that's BS, and it's in my interest to either call them on it or not. And you don't necessarily have to. Sometimes you can tolerate it, and sometimes you can't.
Thanks, Jed. Harry, what do you think? Sometimes it's in our self-interest to be taken in by BS.
Well, I'm not sure that I really understand what's behind that thought. It sometimes is in our interest not to make a fuss about it. And in certain areas of life, for example, political life, we have come to take it for granted, has come to seem to be the normal way of conducting political affairs. So when we encounter a politician giving us a lot of BS, we tend to be rather indifferent to the fact that he's not telling us the truth. It varies. Sometimes we do get upset about it, but on the whole, we sort of turn away with an irritated shrug.
I don't think you're giving our interest in this, in believing falsehoods and sometimes believing falsehoods, enough credit. Because look, you know about the phenomenon of a confirmation bias. I start to believe something, right, and now once I've committed to believing it already, any contrary evidence that comes in subsequent to my having believed, I dismiss it. I subject to rigorous scrutiny, much more than confirmatory evidence. I those people who argue against what I believe, I take them, they're idiots, evil, whatever. And I think the whole structure of media today, take Fox News and all of it, it's all built on this tendency that we have toward confirmation bias, to believe the things, to accept evidence that already supports what we believe and to dismiss any contrary evidence. And this is because, I don't know why, but we have some kind of interest in maintaining our beliefs, whether true or false, whatever evidence comes. I'm not sure. I think sometimes we do, out of self-interest, cooperate with the BSer who's telling us what we want to believe. What do you think?
Well, we certainly do cooperate with people who tell us what we want to believe. We encourage it and we tolerate it and we accept it and we're grateful for it. I'm not sure to what extent that means that we have a preference for BS over truth. I think even in those cases, in most of them anyway, we would really prefer other things being equal to get the truth rather than to get a lot of BS. There's something insulting about BS, I find. It offends me that somebody confronts me with a cloud of BS rather under the pretense that he's giving me information.
Yeah, I think at least in our political life, our interest in the truth waxes and wanes with how close the elections are and how much we can pin on the other guy.
And how important the issues are.
And how important the issues are. Now, I've got an email here that makes a couple points. First, he says BS is really a value-laden term, much more than truth.
So who's the email from, John?
The email is from Paul at speakeasy.net. Interesting. I don't know where his location is. The distinction between truth and BS seems to be an attempt to squeeze values out of facts. Aren't we mistaken to cast the distinction in truth and BS since BS is so value-laden and interest-relative? And the second point, related to what we've just been talking about, if people we catch lying are punished, why do we have political leaders who repeatedly lie even after those lies have been discovered to be lies? I mean, it's not surprising we're not too upset with BS when we're not even upset with lies.
What do you think, Harry?
Well, I think we are upset with lies, at least under certain circumstances. If a politician is found actually clearly lying, where it's indisputable that it's a lie, that it's not really a matter of controversy that it's a lie, I think we do take measures against, and there are committee hearings, there may even be an indictment, all sorts of media intervention, and people get upset about it in a way in which they never get upset by, well, they rarely get upset by BS, although they may get upset by a cumulative mass of BS. Once it becomes clear that somebody is committed to BS, then I think attitudes towards that person do change.
Yeah, you know, after the break, I want to ask whether it's justifiable to treat the BS artist and the outright liar as morally different. I mean, in one way, you said that the liar honors the truth more, honors the importance of truth more than the BSer. And so that would think that, morally speaking, the liar is worse off. In some sense, but we'll dig into that after the break. You're listening to Philosophy Talk. We're asking the question, if truth is so valuable, why is there so much BS around? With Princeton's Harry Frankfurt.
We've supposedly been talking about the epistemology of BS, how to spot it, how to avoid being taken in by it, why people are so prone to engage in it. We've already slid a little into what we want to discuss in the next segment, whether BSing is morally worse than outright lying, and we'll also examine the social consequences of the widespread spread of BS.
The ethics of communication when Philosophy Talk continues.
John Lennon and Give Me Some Truth. I'm John Perry. This is Philosophy Talk, the program that questions everything.
Except your intelligence, and that's no BS. I'm Ken Taylor. We're discussing, if truth is so valuable, why is there so much BS around, with Harry Frankfurt from Princeton University. We've got a caller in the line who's been hanging there for a while, Chris in San Francisco. Welcome to Philosophy Talk, Chris.
Thank you very much. You know, I thought it was interesting. I just kind of tuned in about 10 minutes ago, and I thought it was interesting that you seemed to be discussing where, as lies, outright lies are punished, but rather BSers seem to, you know, get away. Yeah, necessary, and or it's just the norm. But I've come into a situation very recently where I found that, no, in fact, BS is absolutely not tolerated. I'm a brand new lawyer, and just last week, my very, very, very first appearance before a federal judge, I found myself having to defend an argument that was written by a partner of mine, where the judge says to me, Mr. Lawyer, you have 3 minutes to explain to me why I should not sanction you for this argument, which he basically considered BS. He would not have, I don't think in any time he would have said I was lying, but he found our argument so maybe attenuated and stretched that he said it's BS, and I'm going to sanction your office. I don't know how many thousands of dollars it's going to cost us. But I guess maybe in that field where a lot of people would expect me as a professional advocate to maybe stretch the boundaries of BS, I found out in a very personal way, no, there's a limit to it.
Yeah, and Chris,
nothing is punished.
Chris, thanks for that. We had a show on the ethics of lawyers last week, and we were told that lawyers have an unshakable obligation in their legal code, in their ethical code, to the truth. So I guess your firm seemed to have run afoul. You weren't lying, but you were indifferent to the truth, maybe. And I guess so. That's interesting. Thanks for the call. Harry, do you have any comment on that quickly?
Not really, except that in a court of law, of course, the interest in truth becomes much more salient than it is in other contexts where I don't know if the lawyers aren't put under oath, but they are officers of the court who are responsible for advancing the cause of justice. And fiddling around with the truth on their part is probably reprehensible.
Harry, I have a broader question for you. Sometimes when reading your book on BS, I get the impression that you think of it as kind of a minor annoyance sometimes. I can't really tell. Rather than a massive social problem. I think of it as a massive social problem. What do you think? Is it a minor annoyance that just creeps up here and there, or is it a massive social problem?
Well, I think in my personal life it's a minor annoyance, but I think that if I take the situation more broadly and take a larger view of the situation, I think it is a matter of deep concern to the society. Insofar as the society comes to accept BS as normal, as the ordinary and accepted way in which we do things, I think we're in a lot of trouble.
Well, you could also say if a profession like philosophy or a closely related profession like the philosophical study of literature gets inured to the difference between BS and actual search for the truth, it's very corrosive. I get a hint that you think something like that in some of your writings.
But the problem, what I want to probe you about a bit more is, so you make this very strong defense of truth in your book on truth. And it's absolute centrality for culture and civilization and all this. And you say that we really can't help but care about truth. To abandon truth would be a way to give up on being rational. And in some ways, that would be anything goes. So, but how could this happen? Given that we couldn't give up on truth and that, you know, our civilization is still ongoing, how could it really be that massive? Isn't it just... I mean, doesn't your view about truth and how we care about it and how we're committed to caring about it and couldn't give it up entail that BS really couldn't be anything other than a minor annoyance, that deep down inside our institutions and cultural formations are concerned about truth?
Well, I think, Ken, all that Harry's literally committed to is that if we don't care more about truth than BS, our civilization is probably crumbling. I'm not so sure that that's obviously false.
Well, what do you think, Harry?
Well, I think that there are conflicting forces at work. It's like the fact that everybody wants to live doesn't prevent us from behaving in ways that are very deleterious to our health. And you wouldn't conclude from the fact that we eat too much and smoke too much and drink too much and behave in other ways that are self-destructive. You wouldn't conclude from that we don't care about living, that we don't care about health. We do care about it, but we also care about other things that conflict with it, and we indulge ourselves from time to time.
So how do we manage this this contest of competing concerns? I mean, and there are people, I got to say, there are people out there, philosophical people. I said at the very top that philosophers worship at the altar of truth. That's not quite true. I mean, many philosophers worship at the altar of truth, but there's certain kind of postmodernists who think that an obsession with the truth, with a capital T, should be a thing of the past, and it's something we can't reach. It doesn't exist. It's an empty idol or something like that in a Baconian kind of sense. I mean, and those people are offering us new foundations for our culture, they think.
But if they just object to truth with a capital T, if their point is just that there may be different languages and different theories that are factually adequate and can't be chosen between, that's hard to argue with, even from a point of view of devotion to truth. But if they're saying anything goes, that's BS.
Anyway, what do you think, Harry?
Well, I think that if people argue that what counts as the truth is simply a matter of power, that the truth is simply established by the dominant group in society, that sort of postmodernist idea, that I think is very dangerous. It is very corrosive, and it undermines something that I think is quite fundamental to the conduct of society and to our self-respect, for that matter.
Why is that dangerous? I mean, if it's the case, if it's... I have to use this word. If it's in fact the case that what we call truth is only established by power relations or something like that, then pointing that out, why is that dangerous? I mean, if that were true, then social life would not be possible, culture? I mean, what do you say?
It would divert us from a more prudent and authentic way of determining what's true. If that view is correct, then the way to determine what's true is to find out who has the power in society and what they want us to believe. But that's not the way we go about confirming beliefs. It's not the way we go about verifying hypotheses. It's not the way in which we should go about it. We should go about verifying hypotheses in a way that's geared to the nature of reality, not to the power relations in society.
Well, I think the whole issue of global warming is an interesting case in point. That's a case where I think there's been a lot of BS. It was very hard to tell who's telling the truth. There was a book that persuaded a lot of people, actually a novel by Michael Crichton that pointed out how hard it was for non-global warmers to get their articles published and so forth. But as time goes by, the facts seem to have a certain irresistible credibility to them, and the truth obviously does matter. I mean, when we're 6 foot underwater, we'll say, I guess those global warming people had something to say.
Well, right, but that's true when we're 6 feet underwater. But, Harry, I want to ask you if you can give John and I and our listeners some practical advice. I don't know if you have any. So, look, all this stuff comes at me.
This guy's a Princeton philosopher. How practical do you think he is?
I know. But all this stuff comes at me purporting to be true. All these deliverances from all these corners purporting to be true. How am I, and some of it's outright lies, some of it's BS, some of it's truth, but maybe not really known to be true by the tellers. How am I, as a, you know, just the ordinary schmuck I am, can I say that word? Without armed just with my own cognitive apparatus, how am I to separate out this stuff? What am I supposed to do?
Well, it's very difficult to know what to do. A couple of rules of thumb, I think, may be helpful. Whenever you hear a politician talking, just assume that it's BS. Maybe it isn't, but it's a reasonable assumption that it is. And the same thing with advertising, with public relations, and with a lot of the talk that goes on television. So if you start out with a very skeptical attitude, you're probably safer than if you are more gullible and prepared to believe anything. And then, of course, you have to measure what you're told against your own personal experience. There are many things that we don't know very much about, and we can't measure them against personal experience, and they were rather helpless then. But there are some things that we can, where we are in a position to determine what's true and what's false, and to determine also whether what we're being told is being told without respect to the truth or falsity of what it is.
With respect to the truth, I don't know. I think you and John both believe that the truth speaks kind of on its own. I mean, the truth reaches us maybe through our sensation. I mean, you know, the time clock is right in front of my eyes. The microphone is right, and I'm speaking into it. Hard to deny that. Somebody who tried to BS me about that or lie to me about that, I could say, come on, it's right there. But most truth doesn't just push itself on our senses. It hides its face behind, as they say, a cloud of, you know, a cloud. And they have to dispel the cloud. I mean, truth is hard to ferret out. And so I just don't know if, you know, the truth just doesn't speak. It's often mute, and all I've got to go on is the competing sources that purport to represent the truth. And how do I know whether this source better does it than the next source?
Sounds like Harry might recommend the listeners start by reading Hume's Inquiry and adopting a kind of skeptical cast of mind with respect not only to all sorts of things, but also especially to human testimony.
We've got a caller who wants to weigh in on this issue. John in San Francisco.
Yeah, hi. This is regards Occam Razor, which is that the shortest explanation in science tends to be the correct one. People tend to apply that to people that are giving us BS. The more elaborate and longer the story is, I think mature people tend to think that that's BS rather than the short, coherent story. And I'm wondering why that principle seems to apply to BS as well as...
Well, wait a minute. Take George Bush on Iraq and Saddam Hussein and weapons of mass destruction. The short story is Saddam Hussein's a liar. He has weapons of mass destruction. It turned out to be a long, complicated story about why he didn't have them. And anybody who tried to tell that long, complicated story about the whole thing in Iraq and how he was contained and all that was dismissed. So, John, I don't know that you've got... I don't know that your principle applies.
You telling us to get rid of Occam's Razor, Ken?
No, but I don't think... Harry, what do you think?
What do I think? do I have time to think?
Yeah, you have a short time. Not much time.
Not
near
much
the end.
Time.
Yeah.
I think that there is something in what the caller said, that if somebody is speaking with great elaboration and going on and on and on about a certain subject, where you have a sense that the heart of the message could be formulated in a fairly straightforward and concise way, there I think it's pretty clear that you're being fed a lot of BS. I think one of the things that we can prepare ourselves with when we can't rely on our own personal experience is by reading history and by becoming acquainted with the way in which problems are dealt with in human affairs, and then seeing how they're being dealt with now and what the consequences of various approaches to human difficulties are. The more educated you are, the more familiar you are with the ways of human beings, the better position you are in to understand what's going on.
Harry, on that note of encouragement and that there is some practical advice in philosophy, I'm going to thank you for joining us. It's been a great conversation.
Thank you.
Our guest has been Harry Frankfurt, Professor Emeritus of Philosophy from Princeton University, author of On BS and most recently On Truth.
We got a couple of interesting emails, and there's a line of callers that we didn't get to. We want to thank all the people that we did and didn't get to. Thanks for for participating in Philosophy Talk.
So, John, where's your thinking today? What's your thought as a result of all this?
Well, if we'd had more time, I would have asked Harry if this new genre that he's pioneering, which is the short philosophy book, less than 100 pages, and those 100 pages, I think, are squeezed out of out of something by, you know, large fonts and small pages. I guess that, given his last comment, that's a good sign that he's not BSing us, right? He's got something short and pithy to say, and
well,
he says it
go.
In a short and pithy way. That's a good sign.
Yeah, there you go. You know, I think human life is kind of in a precarious situation in modernity, because we've got these powerful means of mass communication and mass persuasion that we really weren't evolved with our limited cognitive apparatus to cope with. I mean, we were evolved to deal with people coming at us one-on-one in face-to-face situations. You know, our progenitors hardly moved about in the world. They didn't get very far. They didn't meet very many people. And now we've got all, and our brains are designed for that. And we've got all this mass stuff coming at us. And a lot of people wanting to BS us and lie to us. And I think it's really hard for us to cope with this cognitively. I really do. I wish we had more time to delve into that, but I do think our culture could collapse because of that, because our brains just aren't designed to cope with all the crap stuff that comes at us.
You know, Hume wrote this this great essay on miracles. Now, there's some recent work by John Ehrman that decries it, but still, his basic idea was, look, you really have this tendency to want to believe testimony, but any time testimony conflicts with what your experience of the way the world works, the uniformities, you should really suspect the testimony. I think that's something we really have to drill into people early on, and that's a big thing for philosophy to do.
Yeah, and our slogan, question everything, that's a recommendation to you, folks. Question everything. Anyway, this questioning continues on our blog, theblog.philosophytalk.org, where our motto is cogito ergo blago. John's already ready, and go check it out.
And you can download podcasts of our program from our website as well. For the final word on truth and BS, we turn to our own resident spinmeister, Ian Scholes, the 60-second philosopher.
Ian Scholes, the blogosphere and mainstream media are increasingly full of gotchas, from the accusation that CBS faked a report on President Bush's military service to revelations and counter-revelations about weapons of mass destruction. We have an obsession with truth. We say, speak truth to power, whatever that means and wherever it gets you. We demand transparency from our institutions, even though transparency usually becomes a different shade of murk. We've had an exposé explosion of plagiarists and fraud perpetrators. Does this mean we're getting better at catching liars, or that more people are lying? Anybody's guess. I would suggest that America has always taken guilty pleasure in those who wink at the truth. We love stories about con games, Vegas, which only exists to deceive us, movies, gossip, whoppers. Davy Crockett claimed to have killed a bear when he was 3 years old. We love that. Magicians, stage shows, horoscopes, fairy tales, myths. George Washington tossing the dollar across the river, not telling a lie about chopping down the cherry tree. Lies, made up by his biographer, Parson Weems, America's first spin doctor. We love P.T. Barnum, Disneyland, and hoaxes. Many believe that the Bible is God's word, as true as it gets if you're a believer. Well, let's go back to the beginning. Genesis, quote, "And the Lord God commanded the man, saying, Of every tree of the garden thou mayest freely eat, but of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil thou shalt not eat of it, for in the day that thou eatest thereof thou shalt surely die," unquote. All right, enter the snake, speaking to Eve. "Hath God said, Ye shall not eat of every tree of the garden?" And Eve said, "Of the fruit of the tree in the midst of the garden, God hath said, Ye shall not eat of it, neither shall ye touch it, lest ye die." So the snake says, "You're not gonna die." He says to Eve, he says, "For God doth know that in the day ye eat thereof, then your eyes shall be opened, and ye shall be as gods, knowing good and evil." So Eve bites the apple, as does Adam, and they do not die. So Mr. Snake, Satan's little prototype, prince of lies, is telling the truth. And God? Lying. Not being a church-going man, I look at it this way. God knew that the tree of knowledge would lead to self-awareness, back-breaking labor, and fig leaves. But rather than telling Adam and Eve these complicated concepts, he just said, "Eat this and you'll die." It's like your dad trying to keep you from playing with the power tools in the basement by telling you there are monsters down there. And the snake? Well, Eddie Haskell, obviously, just wants to make trouble. Unlike Dad, who, if he caught you in the basement, would ground you, God evicted Adam and Eve from the Garden of Eden and even posted scary angels with flaming swords at the East of Eden to make sure they couldn't get back in. These angels were called cherubim, or cherubs. In Ezekiel, they are described as having human form with four faces, a man, lion, bull, and eagle, four wings, unbending legs, feet like calves' hooves, and the whole gleaming like burnished bronze. Now, these days, cherubim are usually shown as babies with cute little stubby wings. So, cherubim, cute little cupids, or terrifying mutated sphinxes? Which is truth and which is, you know, bull? God only knows, or Satan, I suppose. I gotta go.
Ian Scholes, the only man who can solve a philosophical problem in 60 seconds.
Philosophy Talk is a presentation of Ben Manila Productions and the trustees of Leland Stanford Junior University, copyright 2006.
Our executive producer is David Demarest.
Special thanks to Devin Strolovich, Neil Van Leeuwen, Ben Temption, and Mark Stone. Our senior consulting producer is Gordon Earle.
Support for Philosophy Talk comes from various groups at Stanford University.
Also from the Friends of Philosophy Talk and the members of KALW Local Public Radio, San Francisco, where our program originates.
The views expressed or misexpressed on this program do not necessarily represent the opinions of Stanford University or of our other funders.
The conversation continues on our website, www.philosophytalk.org. I'm John Perry.
And I'm Ken Taylor. Thank you for listening.
And thank you for thinking.